There's a real rhythm to the major sessions of the Oregon legislature. The legislature sweeps in with the new year in early January. It sweeps out of Salem with the new fiscal year in early July. In between 6 months of hard work assembling a two-year budget and addressing the other needs of the state, or not, as is sometimes the case, this year's legislature had many of the usual challenges, but also one highly unusual one, dealing with the resignation of the governor a month into the session. Let's get a read on the session from one of its leaders. Tina Kotek is the House Speaker, a Democrat serving District 44 in the Portland area, and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange once again. Tina, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. The resignation of Governor Kitzhaber, let's start there. How big a wobble did that put into the legislative session?
Well, it definitely ramped up the stress level. We're always, you know, very conscious of having good, transparent government and working really hard, and that was a lot of stress at the beginning of the session. And the good thing was that we had a plan and we stuck to it, and Governor Brown came in and I think kept things moving forward. And so, and you know, it dissipated pretty quickly in terms of affecting the legislative work, but I think it's going to have long-term impact. We worked on some ethics bills to try to restore some confidence and more transparency in what's happening in state government, because we think that's important.
Which, with the ethics bills, those particularly were pushed by Governor Brown, and those sailed through pretty easily, didn't they?
They did. They were a series of bills that she pushed personally to clarify how we do public records requests. You know, there was a lot of debate about what the governor was and wasn't releasing at the time. We passed a bill that said if you're the first partner of the governor, you will be a public official. I think that'll be very helpful going forward because there was a lot of gray area there. And we will have a lot of work in the interim on some other issues. We didn't get everything done, but I think we are trying to make sure that people know that we take this seriously. We want to be transparent and accountable. And you know, nobody's perfect, but our job is to be good stewards and do things in a very straightforward manner.
Speaker Kotek, forgive me for trying to achieve too much simplicity. I know this is public broadcast. We do have time for more nuance here. But whether you choose to do it by football score or letter grade or whatever, how would you give a basic assessment of the results of this legislative session?
I would give it a solid A, maybe a B plus if you're, you know, a little bit grading on the curve.
Okay.
But you know, here's the deal. We came in with one focus, and that was to really help families who have not been back to where they were after the Great Recession. The recovery's happening, but a lot of people are being left behind. So we really put working families first, and I think we achieved that goal. We invested in education. We dealt with some significant barriers for working families. And I think we helped the entire state in what we did, and there's a lot of good things to talk about. I think it was a very successful session.
All right, you invested in education, you mentioned. That's always the big stuff, how much money for schools, and it seems to get hung on a number these days. What is the number this time, and how different is it, if at all, from the number you would have liked to have delivered?
Well, our number was, we ended up with $7.4 billion for K-12, substantially higher than what Governor Kitzhaber's budget had back in December. And we think it's a number that provides a stable budget for every district around the state. And for the first time in state's history, we're funding full-day kindergarten. So every district is going to have access to funds to provide full-day kindergarten free of charge to families who wanted and need it. So that in and of itself was a really big deal. Higher education, the investments this year, 22% higher than anything we've done in the last 20 years. So we're trying to make higher ed more affordable and accessible, both at the community college level and the four-year university level. So, and then we did a lot for early childhood as well. So across the spectrum, we tried to invest. And because what's going to get people that sense of opportunity and success is having access to education, and that's the core of what we wanted to do.
Tina Kotek is the Speaker of the Oregon House and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're running through an assessment of what did and did not get accomplished in the recently completed legislative session. You're welcome to jump into the conversation with questions and comments and observations of your own. 800-838-3760, our phone number across the Jefferson Exchange listening area. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So on schools, there's that persistent challenge there of trying to provide enough money. And as you mentioned, the governor even budgeted less than the legislature allocated. There were still people asking for more. By a lot of measures, it seems like Oregon, by a lot of different organizations that measure it, Oregon seems to rank 35th or below in school quality. Is it possible for Oregon to meaningfully raise that without a whole bunch more money? Is it possible to raise that money within the existing revenue system?
That's a great question. The budgets we passed were stable and secure, but they're not going to be game-changing. They're not going to build the things back into our schools that a lot of parents want to see. And that will be a revenue discussion probably next year at the ballot, because while we were able to build strong base budgets for districts, we also targeted some money to things like career and technical education. That was a $35 million investment. We focused on some supports for English language learners around the state, another $12.5 million. So we tried to do some targeted things. But if you're really going to have the type of schools in the lower class sizes and the longer school years that parents really want, that will be a revenue discussion. We went to as far as we could with the revenue we had, and I think now we have to talk about where does the state want to go, and that's really about more resources.
There was not a peep about really changing the state's revenue structure from the perception of people who are 200 miles plus from Salem. Was there more than a peep there in the building?
Oh, I think that's a good assessment. We tried to focus on doing a couple things related to taxes. One was we had some expiring tax credits that are really important to families that we had to figure out a way to pay for. One of those is a working families credit that parents take to help them with their child care costs. And that credit alone cost $31 million, so we had to figure out how to pay for it. So there wasn't a big discussion about overall revenue reform. If you recall, last year, Governor Kitzhaber had worked with business and labor groups trying to come up with a plan. He wasn't successful. So there wasn't a lot of momentum to do anything big or broad. But we did do some small things that I think are really sensible, but we didn't, no new tax credits, no big increases anywhere. That's why I think you're going to see a different discussion next year.
I have to believe there's a real political procedure that has to be followed there. I mean, if you're going to come in with something like an idea for changing revenue, it's probably something you have to have sold pretty well for months, if not years, before the legislative session starts.
Oh, absolutely, because we have the ballot here, right? People will, whatever we do around taxes, whether we do it ourselves or it gets referred, it's going to go to the voters. And you need a lot of public support to change what we're doing. I think everyone realizes we could probably have a different tax structure, but you got to convince voters, and that takes time.
What about even some things that might be small tweaks to the revenue structure, although taxpayers might disagree? Things like kicker reform. I mean, you're sending back how much money in tax?
We had a kicker.
Yeah.
We had a kicker this time, which is now in the form of a tax rebate. So next tax year, people are going to get a little break on their taxes. The total was about $400 million. Our revenues were up, so some money is going back to taxpayers. Because the economy is stronger, we didn't really talk about it. That money's going back to taxpayers. We had enough to cover the basics. But that is an ongoing challenge when money is going back, when we could be potentially investing it back in our schools. But there wasn't a lot of interest in dealing with that.
All right, so it didn't get done this session. But I want to come back to one of the educational issues. You mentioned higher education. Will this hold tuition flat or at least not rising very sharply at the seven state universities in Oregon?
Well, it'll depend on the universities. But what we're hearing is they're really going to hold the line on tuition increases. We actually put into one of the bills to say to the universities, if you need to come back in the second half of the biennium, the second half of the two-year budget, and raise your tuition more than 3%, we want to know why. So hopefully we're going to see universities keeping at the 3 or 4% or below increases. We also help community colleges significantly, so I think they're going to be able to hold down their tuitions. And we passed the Oregon Promise, which is a new tuition waiver program for community college students. If you're coming out of high school and you meet some criteria, you're going to be eligible for free tuitions. So we're going to get more students, I think, going into community colleges, which is a plus.
The 3% figure you mentioned with the state universities, if they have to go over that in the middle of the biennium, tell the legislature why. Do you foresee that happening given, for example, the fact that the state universities are now functioning as seven separate campuses rather than as a unified Oregon university system?
Well, it is really different campus by campus. Southern Oregon has had some financial issues. They might have to go a little higher. But the good thing about what we're asking the universities to do is, yes, you have independent boards, you have more autonomy, but you need to come back and explain to the Higher Education Commission why you would need more than 3%. We feel that all the resources we're going to be sending to the university should be going back into classrooms and helping students graduate. And that's what we're hoping to see, and that's the expectation we'll have.
There are some issues, though. I mean, for example, I'm made aware, and this is only because I work on the Southern Oregon University campus, that, for example, Portland State gets a lot cheaper health insurance premiums for its employees because it can be part of the Kaiser Permanente system, which is not available in the other parts of the state.
Well, you know, healthcare is a very important topic in terms of costs, whether it's in state government in Salem or at the universities, and we are watching that very closely. Yes, in Southern Oregon, you don't have access to Kaiser, but it is our job to keep the cost of healthcare down in the entire public employee benefits system, of which universities are a part. So not to get too into the weeds, but we're very much aware of the cost containment problems in healthcare, and we're trying to keep an eyeball on that.
Thank you for pulling me back from the weeds. Yes, okay. Tina Kotek is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Oregon House Speaker. You can join us as we're discussing the accomplishments of the legislative session completed not quite 3 weeks ago. 800-838-3760, the phone number, the email address jx@jeffnet.org. On to transportation, Speaker Kotek. Both parties acknowledge a need to fix up roads and bridges and transportation infrastructure generally. Nothing passed.
Yeah, definitely a disappointment. We did do a little bit in transportation when we knew a bigger comprehensive package wasn't going to pass. We did authorize $35 million in public bonding to do some specific safety-related projects. So one of the things that got funded for some of your listeners that might be of interest is we put some money into making sure there's more of those cable barriers along I-5, and there's a whole spread in Southern Oregon that needs to get done. So we put some money into that. It is a challenge for us. We have to work harder at the topic. You know, we didn't get there during the session, but sometimes it takes a little longer. We will be back on the topic. If we don't maintain the current roads and bridges and things we have, we're going to be in trouble, and we need to come and work on that together, Republicans and Democrats.
Well, speaking of guardrails, I mean, the Republicans really set up a fence of their own before the legislative session even started and insisted that if the clean fuel standard was renewed, the low-carbon fuel standard, known as clean fuels generally universally, if that passed again, it was renewed, that they would not go for the transportation option, which is exactly what happened. I mean, I'm trying to figure out the dynamics here of why the Democrats seem so attached to the clean fuel standard and why the Republicans are ardently hate it.
Well, it was very unfortunate that Republicans put themselves in that political box so early on in session. We passed the low carbon fuel standard, clean fuels program, back in 2009. All we were doing was lifting the sunset date, which means it would go on and continue to be implemented. It's very important to reduce, you know, greenhouse gas emissions, you know, make the air cleaner, also help incentivize an alternative fuel industry here in the state. And where it came down to is the petroleum industry really balked because they didn't want to be helping to pay for that change in how transportation fuel is produced, trying to make it cleaner. It is a good program. It's really important from a climate change perspective, and I believe you should have clean fuels and you should have a transportation package, and they shouldn't be linked. And the governor said the same thing by the end of session. She's like, we got to separate these two things because we need both, and it's really a false choice to say you can't have one or the other.
Was the belief that that if you just let it go this session, that is this something that can be passed in the even year session next year, or does it have to wait for the next biennium?
Transportation?
Yeah.
I think it'll depend on building that public momentum for it. If it doesn't happen in the short session, definitely in 2017. When we're back, we have longer, you know, some more time to work on it. It will depend on all the different people who care about transportation, the business groups, the truckers, the AAA, coming together saying we need to do this and have a big enough plan that can actually take us into the next two decades. And right now we don't have that.
So the clean fuel standard just requires that there are formulations of the fuels that are less carbon emitting. Is that it?
Yeah, it's a market-based mechanism to say you have to have a certain amount of fuel available that has a lower carbon footprint, and then over the next 10 years, we're going to reduce we're going to improve our emissions by 10%. And it is a market-based mechanism, and that's why it works so well, because it requires everybody in the market to move to a different type of fuel blend, or to promote, you know, electric vehicles, or, you know, compressed natural gas vehicles. So it's complicated, and I think that was part of the challenge. It's a complicated plan, but it will work. It's worked in other states, and Big Oil really hated it because it is working.
And it adds, what, 4 to 19 cents a gallon, per gallon of fuel? Is that the general range I've heard?
It could. It could, over the course of the 10 years, it could range anywhere from an additional 4 cents or maybe up to 19 cents. But the price of gas is so erratic. You know, what's happening in Iran right now with our agreement could also, you know, increase the price of gas. So the reality is we have to do our part to have cleaner burning fuels out there, and this is the way to do it. And we can have both. We can have clean fuels and we can have transportation.
Tina Kotek is the Oregon House Speaker and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, jx@jeffnet.org by email. James in Springfield, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Speaker Kotek.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to mention a few items since the Speaker said that she would give the legislature an A or a B+. If I could just run through a couple of items, and then I'll take my comments off the air.
Sure.
But one of the things they didn't deal with was the minimum wage. Another one was the fact that with Medicaid, they're allowing for-profit, out-of-state corporations to take over the Lane County Trillium and skim big profits off it. And on the GMO, they passed a terrible law restricting local laws, county or city laws, with on labeling and banning the GMO laws. And on the other hand, on the marijuana dispensaries, they said they wanted to have local control, and they allowed, you know, that, you know, the last one, if I could, is on forestry. They didn't do anything about the herbicide spraying laws, and there's currently no excise tax on logging on private land. They did nothing about the stream buffers, which are the worst in 4 states.
Okay, that's a long list. Let's give the Speaker a chance to dive in here. Thanks for that, James.
James, you are definitely paying attention, and I really appreciate that. So my grade is based on what I saw as our main goal, which was to help create more opportunity for working families. I would agree, you know, minimum wage was a huge disappointment for me, so maybe B+ is a little bit more accurate because we do need to raise the minimum wage. I had put out a proposal late in session based on a lot of conversations to move us to a $13 an hour minimum wage over 3 years and also lift the prohibition on local governments from going higher, because in places like Portland or even Eugene, Springfield, you might need a higher minimum wage than $13 an hour. We're going to come back on that in the short session, so stay tuned on that. It's a priority for me, and it's really important. On the purchase of Trillium by Centene, that is the first for-profit company coming in to own one of our Medicaid plans here in the state. We're going to be watching that very closely because, you know, people should be making a lot of money off of people in the Oregon Health Plan, and we have to keep a good eye on that. On GMO, I would agree. We probably didn't go as far as we could have. I think we'll have to come back on, you know, finding that balance between coexistence of organic and non-GMO and GMO products in ag, and we didn't get as far as we needed to there, so I would agree. On spraying, I would agree as well. We could have gone further. We did improve some penalties and some more oversight on what is actually happening out there right now, but I know from many advocates' perspective, we could have gone further, particularly around buffers, and I anticipate that will come back as well. Excise tax, we have Representative Paul Hovey in the Lane County area to thank for keeping that topic around excise taxes on timber front and center. We weren't successful, but he got a lot more movement on that bill than he has in previous sessions. And then stream buffers, that's not a topic I know a whole lot about, so I'll have to stop there.
But then there was the issue he also raised about marijuana, the bill that emerged about local control and counties being able to opt out of retail sales if more than 55% of the county voted against the Measure 91.
Yeah, we ended up with a bipartisan compromise on what local communities can do. You know, given all the things we were working on, you throw on top of that voters said you need to set up a new regulatory structure for adult use of recreational marijuana. And we did that. It took multiple bills to get there. But the opt-out issue became very contentious. And where it ended up was, if you're a community that did not support Measure 91, you're in a different you can opt out of having any either dispensaries or retail sites in your community. We believe that that's a good short-term fix on that issue. I think what's going to happen is over time, communities are going to, this is going to become more normal, but we're in that kind of transition stage where for some communities, to get the bill done, we needed to have that out for them. I think that will change over time when people realize that it is a good system, you know, it's not being abused, but it will take some time.
You mentioned this becoming a bipartisan solution and a compromise. The whole issue of inter-party cooperation, Republicans make it sound like with the larger Democratic majorities in both houses of the legislature that their ideas aren't accepted, their stuff doesn't end up getting to the floor, all that sort of thing. What's the effort as the Speaker of the House, the whole House, to make sure you include people from both parties?
I take that responsibility very seriously. I met with all members of the House, both Republican and Democrat, at least twice during session in one-on-one meetings and said, what are you working on? What do you need? And what you see is a lot of members from the Republican side did have bills pass and had some of their district priorities met, whether it was, you know, building a dock in Brookings or helping fund a sobering center in Grants Pass. Everybody understood that what we do has to benefit the whole state. And I took that very seriously. I also understand that when you're in the minority, as the Republicans are right now, you have to have a certain amount of political rhetoric. I totally get that. But at the end of the day, I think everyone can go back to their districts and say, yeah, this is going to improve life in my district, and here's what's going to be good. And, you know, pick a part of the state, and I can tell you good things that are happening there.
Gun background checks on private sales. Has any issue generated more heat this session other than education or transportation?
No, probably not. Those are the big ones, right? We had a big debate on education and clean fuels, but then you put guns on top of that. We passed a common sense background check bill that we think is going to keep communities safer. It could provide a little more inconvenience for people who want to transfer guns, but by having background checks on all transfers and sales, no matter where they happen, we're really keeping people safer. It's not going to solve all of our problems, but it was a very reasonable approach to an important issue.
Tina Kotek is the Speaker of the House. Just a couple seconds left. Are you going to run for something else in 2 years, next year rather?
Oh, I'm going to stay in the House. I like the job I'm doing, and I think a functioning legislature is important for the state, and I'd like to stay and work as Speaker as long as I can.
Well, it's good to talk to you today. Tina Kotek, again, the Speaker of the Oregon House. Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeff. Have a great
day. You bet.